Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Radio Gorgeous was the proud sponsor of the Cookbook Festival 2018. I had a talk with Ella Mills, better known as Deliciously Ella, about her journey and her latest cookbook, The Plant-Based Cookbook. Welcome to the first ever Cookbook Festival, and welcome Ella Mills, who is our first ever author at our first ever Cookbook Festival. I assume you all are familiar with Ella's book and Ella's work, but this morning we wanted to sort of go through more in detail your story and your journey and tell you about your food. And first of all, I think we're going to talk about what is in the gorgeous little boxes you have in front of you.
Yeah, so hi everyone, thank you so much for coming this morning. So you might have already been tucking in, which is everyone nodding, but in case you're not, there's a little savoury muffin, which is our courgette and red pepper muffin, which is in the breakfast chapter. And then there's a little bit of banana bread, also in the breakfast chapter. Are you all enjoying it, hopefully? Amazing. And then there's one of our oat bars as well, so you can either snack on that now, take it away, and I hope there's this little nice bit of fuel for the morning.
Exactly, and I believe your savory muffins are still warm from the oven, so I would get to those first. And speaking of first, wanted to start with what started you on this journey. You were a university student, 2011, and got a pretty shocking diagnosis.
So I have this terrible tendency of answering this question in like the whole 45 minutes. So interrupt me at any point. I will try and not take that long. So I was a university student and a Haribo addict, which is ironic given that we're now all about the red pepper and courgette muffins. But I was end of my second year, kind of completely normal, and then quite sort of almost overnight I got very unwell, and I spent the next 4 months in that hospital, and at the end of that I was diagnosed with a condition that affected my autonomic nervous system. It was called postural tachycardia syndrome, and it basically affected kind of everything, but it's characterized by the fact that when you sit down your heart rate's normal, and then you stand up and it goes up by more than 30 beats a minute, and mine would change from like 60, 65 to 170, 180 within seconds. So as you can imagine, that causes issues. Your blood pressure also drops, and terrible dizziness, risk of blackouts. I also had very, very chronic fatigue. I had loads of digestive issues, headaches, all kinds of different pains and complications. And so, I was 20 years old. I was put on steroids. I have doctors talking to me about taking beta blockers. I've like literally got a spreadsheet of medication. And it's just so not how I expected to be at that point in my life. I couldn't really deal with it. I really struggled to deal with it. I really struggled to acknowledge the reality of it. So instead of that, I just watched The Kardashians for a year.
Well, also when you're ill, I mean, even when you have a broken arm and you're walking down the street, you feel like, oh, I'm that person. You know, you view people on crutches as like, they're always on crutches, they're always gonna be on crutches. So you probably viewed yourself as like, I'm the sick person now.
Totally, I think my understanding of who I was shifted so much. And I've learned this so much, I think, through this whole experience, is how having some sense of purpose or passion or some semblance of learning or growing in some way is so important, I think, for us as human beings. And I wasn't able to do anything, and I really struggled to deal with that. So I was in bed for a year basically, and I shut myself off from everyone. I saw myself as so different from everyone else. I felt like I didn't fit in at all with my friends, so they wouldn't like me anymore. So instead of risking that, I would just stop talking to them, which is arguably not very nice on my side.
Well, but and also it's very isolating.
Totally, but I also really isolated myself because I was so lacking in confidence at this point, and had such a negative view of myself, and my self-esteem was so low that I was too nervous to kind of put myself out there with other people. So this kind of went on for like a year basically, and at the end of that I hit, especially with my mental health, just a complete rock bottom. And I realized, you know, I love my mum, I was going to live at home forever if I continued on this trajectory. I was never going to be able to really have a job. I didn't think I'd ever really have friends again, and yeah, I just had this kind of honest realization that this was a very, very slippery slope that I was on. And so I realized something had to change. I'd taken all the doctor's medications that they had available at this point, and they'd worked a little bit, but not enough. And so I started to think, okay, well, what else could I possibly do alongside this? So I obviously went to Google, as we all do, and I started looking at what else I could do, and I came across lots of people for all kinds of different things who'd use elements of lifestyle and diet and nutrition to really positive effect, some more than others, but all having some semblance of positive effect. And I started reading up on nutrition, and I started to understand a little bit more about kind of how our body works and why you need, you know, all the different vitamins and what, you know, vitamin A actually does in your body and things like that. And then you start to realize, right, well, most of these vitamins and minerals are coming from our plant-based foods. You know, I'm meant to eat my 5 a day, but I probably eat my 5 a month. And
caribou.
Yeah, it's just like fizzy cherries. Exactly. And so, okay, this is interesting. Like, I'm going to start to cook. And then I went online and I started to look for, I was looking for plant-based cookery stuff because I was like, well, that's what I need to be focusing on. And I just couldn't find it. Like, what I was finding was all your diety stuff, like your Atkins diet, your Dukan diet, which was the last thing I was looking for. It's all about kind of stripping it back in aesthetics. Or I was finding the more kind of old school vegetarian that was either loads of like phyllo pastry and cheese, which was again not really what I was looking for, or it was the kind of slightly hippier side. And so, like, I remember the only book I could find on Amazon that seemed to fit the bill came, and it was like a paperback fiction book, like there were no pictures in it, and I opened to it to a page, and I keep saying this, and I actually haven't given the recipe a chance, so if anyone, it is a favourite recipe of yours, I apologise, and I do vow to try it, but it was almond milk pate, and I just thought, oh, that sounds so rank. And also, this is from someone, yeah, this is also, yeah, from someone who didn't even really know almond milk was a thing. And, you know, I definitely would have made the jokes about, like, you can't milk an almond. And so I just remember looking at it being like, no, this is not it. And so that's why I started Deliciousella, because I was like, okay, I want to put all these plants in the middle of my plate. That's what I want to be focusing on eating. I can't find anyone else to tell me how to do it, so I'm going to do it myself. And I couldn't cook. I'd never really been very interested in cooking. So the first kind of foods I made were like gruel, basically, like over some water. It was not good. As I said, I didn't know almond milk and things like that were a thing. And gradually it got better, and I started to share it on Deliciousella. And that was a tool as well, helping my mental health as well as my physical health, because coming back to the idea of a sense of just like some sense of achievement in your day, and so learning food photography, that whole online space of sharing, editing the food, and obviously trying to play around, editing the recipes, and then playing around, editing the pictures, and then playing around with the recipes was, you know, a sense of like a reason to kind of wake up, and that felt really good.
I'd say it seemed to me that you, you know, for, understandably, for a while, felt quite like a victim. Why is this happening
totally
to me? And then sort of one day realizing that's the wrong question. The question is, what can I do about it?
Absolutely. And I think this Matt, who's my husband and my business partner, is the thing he says all the time. It's his like number one rule that he lives by. And I really do believe in it. So he was like, you've got to internalize the solution. Like, no matter what's going on in your life, like, you have to be responsible for it. And I was doing the opposite. But what was really powerful as well is, as I said, I didn't really share what was going on with me, and I was really embarrassed of it. And the girlfriend of mine who suggested writing a blog, she said, well, I think you should put an about page, and I think you should tell people like why you're doing this, because, you know, the food landscape's changed a lot since, you know, in the last 5-6 years. And at that point, like, making a green smoothie was not the norm. Like, Pratt did not have green smoothies. Like, my friends were like, you are drinking a swamp, that looks disgusting. And, you know, vegan food or plant-based food, like, it was a very weird niche thing. Like, it wasn't, you know, you didn't have ZZ's advertising their new vegan menu in every corner. Like, it's changed so, so much. And so I think you need an about page. Like, you need to explain to people why you're doing this, because it is a bit weird. And I thought, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. So I wrote it. It was actually really cathartic. And it was the first time I kind of written down, like, this is, was my diagnosis. These are all the symptoms. This is how I've been feeling. This is what I'm interested to see if it helps. And I was very skeptical, but I was very interested to see if it helped. And as I started to share it with friends and they shared it with friends, it was the first time that people were like, oh, that's where Ella's been. Like, she didn't just literally disappear. Like, that's what it was. And what was so interesting to me and completely changed my mindset was, especially as more people started to read it, and it was just not just my kind of close friendship group, I got so many messages from people saying, well, I've been dealing with this, or I've been dealing with that, or my sister's been dealing with this, my friend, whatever. And you suddenly realize you are not on your own. Like, whatever it is you're dealing with, mental or physical health wise, like, you can guarantee, even if it's something a little bit different, a different diagnosis, you are not the only person going through the motions of that. And there was something really powerful about flipping that mindset again, of kind of owning it and just accepting it and saying, okay, you know, you're not the only victim here. Like, it's not just you against the world.
And it's interesting too, the sort of creating the blog to keep you disciplined, to stop watching Kardashians.
Well, I did watch some Kardashians.
Yeah, exactly. But also, you know, it was a way of de-isolating yourself. It was a way of making you do it. And I think that's something, and you really did create a community, and that's something you have remained extremely loyal to.
Yeah, community, you know, all of you guys, everyone who's part of the Digital community is the cornerstone of everything we do. Like, it's the most important part in Shisiela by a million miles. And it started quite accidentally because I was spending a lot of time on my own and because I had kind of isolated myself from a lot of my real life friends. When people started messaging and like emailing in when they started making the recipes, I was like, oh my God, I have all these online friends. So I would reply to everything, and I also had loads of time. So I would reply to everything and really get into the kind of weeds of what they were cooking, what they were enjoying, you know, getting so much information from them. And so it started this two-way dialogue, and then people started asking for things or requesting recipes, and immediately Shisiela started evolving on the basis of this idea of community. Obviously the community's grown a lot, but it's always been led by what our community, by what our audience wants. We've not taken one decision so far, big or small, not based on that. And so that's a really powerful thing for me, and I think again it makes you realize, and it's important always to me to kind of share, is that like everyone's going through this journey of the ups and downs of whatever it is that they're dealing with in their life together, and they're not on their own in it. And I think we don't have enough community in our life, and obviously it's online, so it is a bit different, but I'm very passionate about it.
And how did the blog turn into the app, because then the app really exploded things?
Yeah, so the app was our kind of big moment, actually. So the blog was 2012, and then beginning of 2013, the same friend that suggested the blog said, this thing Instagram is going to be super cool, you need to be on Instagram. It's okay. So she is all credit.
She's been
to her. Yeah, totally. And so I said, okay, so I went on Instagram, and it was also a way of motivating myself, because on the blog I was doing maybe like 3 recipes a week, but in between I would just see the same thing over and over again. And she was like, this is a good way of motivating yourself as well to try lots of new things, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because you'll be sharing them, which was actually so true. So I started doing that, and that was when that community element really dialed up as well, because you had that kind of, you know, hourly interaction with the community, and it grew really quickly again because there wasn't much like this out there at that point. And then people started asking for cooking classes, workshops, supper clubs, things like that. So that was step one. And then I was just finding, from my perspective, from a kind of practical thing, I just thought the blog's this amazing platform, but it's not particularly useful. Like, I've always wanted to show it to be very useful. And if you want to make dinner tonight, do you want to scroll through like 60 pages with massive pictures? That's more kind of perusing on a Sunday.
Yes, or meal planning for a week.
Exactly.
Which I don't do.
Or getting ideas. But if you're coming home from work and it's 7 o'clock on a Monday night, that is annoying. Whereas the idea with the app would be as like a pocket recipe book, basically, and you'd have everything on there, and it's so quick and quite functional. And so I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And my mum, who's so sweet, she's been the biggest part of the whole journey, was like, yeah, I think it's great, but I was going to invest all the money I'd earned from my supper clubs and my app, supper clubs and workshops and stuff into it. And she was a bit like, you're going to invest everything into it. And I was still living at home, and I think they really wanted me to move out. And so I was just taking up the whole kitchen and making so much mess. And so they were a bit like, okay, yeah. My mum was like, you just need to understand like the decision you're making, because, you know, it's going to probably take you like a year, maybe 2-3 years to make back the money and start making a profit on the
and
app.
This was your first business decision.
Totally.
And this was, I mean, you barely finished uni.
Yeah, no, I had no idea what I was doing.
No other jobs.
No, yeah. No, no, and so my mom was trying to give me all this advice, and I was like, yeah.
Understandably concerned.
Yeah, really valid advice. And because I didn't even know what like marketing or PR was. I obviously had no plan. I was like, we have social media. And so off that went, and my mom and I looked at the top 200 apps on the iTunes store the night before in food and drink. And number 200, and this was the UK iTunes store, the number 200 wasn't in English. And I was like, you know, I think we can take that. It's not in English, and most people in our country don't speak that many other languages. And I think it was quite a niche. I think it was maybe in like Polish, or like it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't, anyway. So we can do it, okay. And so then my mom like comes running into my room in the morning. She's like, it's number one. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because obviously like the last thing on my mind, because I just put it up on our Instagram and our Facebook and our blog, was that it would be, like she was talking about the app, and then the app had gone to number one on iTunes. And I was like, oh my God, okay. And it was such an interesting moment because obviously social media is really new, and it was the first time of like really seeing the power of this compared to kind of more conventional, you know, obviously, and also that it cost no pounds to advertise it through our own communities. And it was on the back of that that someone then approached me to write a book. And again, my mum was like, you know, you'll probably spend a year doing it, sell like 500 copies. And I was like, yeah, you're right, but it will be really amazing for the brand. Okay. I think she's just in the back of her head, is like, please just move out. Like, just focus on things that will help you move out.
Get a job.
Exactly. Yeah, my dad's like, when's Ella getting a real job? And my mum's like, no, this is going to work. And then she's like, no, Ella, no, don't. Anyway, so, but then I thought, okay, well, if we are going to do it, like, I don't just want to jump in with the first person I meet. So I went out, approached some agents, met my now agent, they introduced me to our now publisher, and that's where the cookbook came from. And that was the kind of complete game changer in our whole journey, because again, it was the power of social media, and just the community was a fraction of the size that it is now, but they sold us out of books before the book was published, and we had like no TV or anything like that. And that was the kind of moment that it was fascinating to see, yeah, the power of digital and this kind of new wave of community and connection. And but B, suddenly we'd gone from this kind of, yeah, small community where we're all talking to each other every day, and I think everyone felt they were talking to me, to people just talking about you and not realizing that it's all still me. And you're like, so they're like tagging their friends, like, God, do you think she's quite annoying today?
You're like,
stop.
I'm right here.
Exactly.
But, and so that really exploded. And if partially, which you very much acknowledge, there's been a lot of serendipity in your life, and really hitting the zeitgeist of that moment of people wanting to eat healthier, people, you know, making that connection, mind-body connection, you know, eating for mental health, eating for physical health. And it was at that moment that you were sort of wondering what to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And you met your now husband. I really wanted to know what you think, if you hadn't met Matt then, what do you think would have happened? Because you were at a moment where a lot of small businesses get to, that you're big, but you get too big too quickly, you don't know, you know, and also because you had, it's not only your baby, it's your baby, you know, you've created this community. You were healed by doing this. It is integral to you, and if it's gonna get bigger, you have to let go a little.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. I've honestly wondered this. I don't know what would have happened without Matt. And sometimes, and I know it's a really female audience, I've had women get quite cross with me for giving him too much credit. Like, I had this moment, I write all our newsletters, and I wrote a newsletter, and I just signed it. It was at the beginning, like quite shortly after we started working together, and I wrote like, blah, 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 blah. Love, Matt, Ella, and Delicious Ella. And I had this, rant from someone being like, you are destroying female empowerment, you're such a negative role model to people, that you were doing it on your own, now you're giving a man all the credit. And I was like, but he deserves half the credit. Like, this is not me being self-deprecating, this is not me not trying to, you know, recognize women's brilliant abilities, this is the fact that I had no prior experience, and I did not know how to make an Excel spreadsheet, and I desperately needed someone that did. And I also didn't have brilliant self-confidence, and I was nervous to put myself out there. And he, in a kind of loving but firm way, really pushed me and really, really helped me kind of see what I could do. And I desperately needed that. Like, he's empowered me more than anyone that I've ever spent time with. And I think he deserves so much credit for that. But just after the book came out, I was like, gosh, I really need to hire someone now. Like, this is too much for just me. But I've never been to a job interview. I've never actually been into an office. And so, because I started at uni, and then I kept going the day I finished. And so, it's like, right, I need to hire someone. Obviously, just put it out on Instagram. I don't know how else you do these things. And I was like, literally sitting there with someone, like having a coffee with them, and I was like, what do you ask them? So I was like, do you like to cook?
Do you know what quinoa is?
Are you nice? Like, will you help me? You know, these aren't the best in questions for a job interview, I have subsequently learned. And I was talking about cooking classes and things. And, you know, to be honest, the cooking classes were a terrible business decision because they would take me like 2 days to prep for. And you can only have like 12 people in the class, and you can only charge a certain amount. So there was no sense of scale that could happen there.
What did your mom say about those?
She was quite encouraging of those, but they were a brilliant way to start, because she was like, at least the money's coming in rather than all going out. And that was Matt's question. He was like, so do you have a P&L for your cooking classes? And I was like, a what? And he was like, a P&L. And I was like, I've got my ingredients. And I thought he meant like all my stuff. And I was like, what is that? And he was like, a profit and loss. I was like, no. And he was like, are you keeping track of how much you're spending on each one? And I was like, yeah, well, I know my ingredients cost about this. And he was like, but what about transport? What about like the cost of like the printer to print out all the like recipe cards? What about your time? And I was like, no. I don't have that. And we started to kind of get into it, and it was just, I knew this already, that there was just no way that all these opportunities were coming in, and there was just no way for me to kind of take advantage of them on my own, because A, I just had so much to learn, and I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting that. I just never done it before, so I didn't know that it was even a thing, and I had loads and loads to learn. But also, I love the creative side. I hate the practical side of Delicious Yella. Matt loves it. He loves spreadsheets, and he's really good at them, and he loves, like, he has a brilliant sense of kind of the sky is the limit, and he has this amazing sense of following a dream, whereas I can be a bit more like, oh, what will people think? Will people laugh us out the room? And he's like, but who cares if they laugh us out the room? Let's try it. And so together, it's been amazing. And the other thing that was quite nice at that point is, up until that point, everything we'd done had been quite reactive, and it was like, okay, now this is what Delicious Yella is. Let's make a proactive plan and actually start to create a business that we are driving, we are leading, and it's not up to other people if they want to work with us or not work with us, etc.
I would say, because it did strike me that at that point, one, you weren't super confident. You were clear and passionate about what you're doing and the bits you knew about
it.
And it absolutely required someone you trusted.
Totally.
To take it forward. Because one, it's very exposing to expose what you don't know.
Yeah.
And also, you didn't know it.
Yeah.
but you felt such ownership over it.
Exactly. And as you said, also, because obviously it's been such a personal journey as well, that it's not a company to me, like, it's such a part of me and like my soul and my being, and I feel so connected to it, and I don't think I ever could have done it without actually it being him. I don't think there's anyone else I could have done it with, because I think it had to be someone you felt so deeply connected to and such a kind of innate sense of trust. And also, he obviously knows me inside out, because we do everything, we literally do everything together.
Where is he?
He is away. This is the longest we've ever spent together since we met 3.5 years ago. I'm struggling. And so I know that he can sit there and be like, because Delicious Yella is a very personal company. And so I know he'll say, right, that's Ella, that's not Ella. Ella would say that, Ella wouldn't say that. And that sense of trust has allowed us to do so much more, so much quicker, because you can kind of divide and conquer, and there's no way I would have been able to do as much as we've done in the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, because I could really see someone coming in at your point saying, okay, this is what we need to do.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, no.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that you're right, that it would have been disastrous.
Yeah.
For both you and for Deliciously Ella.
And impossible, actually, for the person taking the job as well, because they would have to second guess my every thought, and that's not possible unless you're kind of someone's like best friend or family. Like, you can't expect someone who works with you on a professional basis to know that about you. That's a kind of, it's an unfair task.
Yeah. And one of the things I did want to get into, because it is so personal and you've built it so personally, but you are not Deliciously Ella.
I mean, no.
You are Ella, which is separate. How do you manage that? Because I know you spend a huge amount of time, you're incredibly loyal, you have sort of a built-in compass, a company compass. You know, you have your consumer research done.
Yeah.
You're so entwined with it. How are some of the ways you... some of the pitfalls of being so exposed, and how do you manage it?
Yeah, such an interesting question, and thank you for saying it, because everyone thinks I am. Like, Matt always jokes, he's like, he is delicious. because I think it is interesting. People do feel like Deliciously Ella is you, and sometimes separating the two is really difficult. Deliciously Ella is a company, a community-built company that's about inspiring people to live a healthier, happier life. It isn't it's not the Ella show. Like, it's not the version of the Kardashians, you know? You don't want to hear my every thought and my every move. And I don't show that either. You know, our Instagram and our social media and our communications in general, and like our new podcast and things like that, they all focus around this area. So you'll see what I'm cooking, but I don't show you all my friends. You know, that's a rare thing. And that to me was important and was always the case from day one. I mean, I also, like, I'm really boring in real life, like, I promise you that. And I just sit at home talking to my dog. And, you know, there's not much to show on that side. But it also, also for our audience, like, it's important it's really important to be really useful. And I feel very passionately about why we do what we do. You know, I said at the beginning, like, I probably ate my 5 a month rather than 5 a day. And, like, that's very common. It's about 26-27% of the UK eat their 5 a day, and now it's meant to be our 10 a day. So we are a long, long way off where we need to be. We're meant to eat about 30 grams of fibre a day. The average in the UK is 17.2 grams, so that's, you know, basically half. So
can I ask you a question? Okay, so maybe people here do eat their 30 grams a day. What does 30 grams look like? Like,
it's a lot.
Is it like 2 bowls of oatmeal or 1 bowl of oatmeal? Or
No, it's a lot. And that's the thing, is that's the idea. And that's why it's called plant-based, is that you need to build your meals around the plants. Yeah, your beans, your nuts, your seeds, your whole grains, your fruit, your veg, etc. And I feel very passionately about how important that is. And so I think it's also important to kind of separate the personality part of it to a certain extent, because the two are very different things.
In terms of your business, I think, again, the strong partnership and marriage with you and Matt has really helped you develop as a person as well. And one of the things you made clear is trying to embrace your mistakes. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really good concept, actually, and if anyone is part of a small business or is interested in it, I think it is important, because you do make a lot of mistakes. We all make a lot of mistakes, and, you know, that's where you learn the most from. Like, everything we've got wrong has helped us get things right, and I think it's important to look at it like that. And I guess generally my kind of second passion, other than everyone's 5 a day at the moment, is that sense of, I feel like we just need more conversation around these things. It's the same way, like, everyone thinks they're on their own going through stuff. They think they're the person messing up, and actually they're not. We all make so many mistakes. We all often feel not good enough to do something, or like a bit of a fraud in a situation, you know, that kind of all too familiar sense of imposter syndrome and things like that. And actually it's so common. It's something so many people deal with every single day.
Well, that's another element of social media, where we're putting out this perfect image.
Well, it's a highlights reel,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so that one of the things also, you know, and in your business resume, you don't say, and we failed at this, and we failed at that, and we sucked at that, and that was a terrible mistake. But it is part of the conversation of how you grow, and sort of opening up around that. So if you don't mind, what was one of the mistakes, and how did you grow from it?
Oh my God, there's so many. I don't even know. I don't even know how, where to start. I'm trying to think of one of the first. Do you know the first mistake? Well, I made more mistakes before this. But my first big mistake, for example, was like having, and for me, most of my mistakes I can stem back from the same issue, and that's always been lack of confidence and lack of ability to see that this would succeed. And, you know, Matt's like, we're going to get here. And I'm like, we're going to get there. Maybe. And you know, so with the app, for example, I was working with a guy who's a website developer because what we were just using, I was just using a free WordPress site at this point. I spent $20, that was all I spent the first year of Delicious Yellow, for it to be deliciousyellow.com rather than WordPress.deliciousyellow.com. But I was like, okay, we need a bit of an upgrade. People are coming to visit this now, let's make it a little bit nicer. So I started working with this guy, and so when I wanted to do the app, I was talking to him and he said, well, I can do the app, I do apps. So that was perfect, brilliant, okay, let's do it. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, I should probably, you know, just maybe like call, you know, a few friends, parents, or lawyers. And I was like, should I just ask them a question or two about ownership or anything? I was like, this is so silly, like, it's, you know.
It's minute.
Totally, and it's going to be so small, and like, you know, who really cares? And I didn't own our app until last year. Because he had another contract, because he didn't even make the app, and I didn't even ask. He actually then outsourced the coding of the app to someone else and had a contract with him. So I owned all the content, and this other guy owned all the code. And obviously on an app, the app doesn't exist, minus the code. So it was a very grey area of who technically owned the app. And it wasn't until last year that we kind of smoothed this over. And we started to own it. And it was a really important lesson for me to realize. And I wasn't getting on well with this guy at this point. And I was like, we need to move developers. And that's when I realized, I can't move developers. I don't own it. And so that was a really good lesson. I think one of, and then when Matt and I started working together, we always had this sense of, like, it's really important to know what you don't know. Like, acknowledge where your strengths are, but also acknowledge your weaknesses, or just the areas that you don't have so much experience in. And take kind of the ego out of it. Neither of us had ever worked. We really wanted to focus on the product space, and neither of us had ever worked in that area. Matt was working in finance and business development. And so we said, well, we really need to hire someone. So we hired, and we always say it's the one thing we judge him for, because he's brilliant, but we hired the former head of innovation from Innocent Drinks. And why he came aboard, I can't tell you, because we didn't even have an office, or, like, you know, just had a pipe dream. But he came aboard, and where am I going with this?
In terms of what you
My mistakes, I know, I try. Oh, yes, exactly, sorry. So we started hiring all these brilliant people. And I just remember sitting in the room with them, and I just felt so stupid. And I just felt, well, why am I here? Like, what can I do? Am I just going to be the face of this? Am I actually even, like, relevant? Can I bring anything to the table? Because they were all talking about these things, and I don't know what that is, I don't know what that is. And there was a moment, they were all talking about these things, everyone kept saying, talking about FSDUs, and making it sound so really important. I was like, God, what is this? I really worry. Anyway, we found out a day later. It's a freestanding display unit. It's a cover box. It's just a really big cover box. And I just remember being like, okay, maybe you're not that stupid. You just don't know the terminology. They are talking about cover boxes. But we then... it's a really insightful moment, actually. But we... But anyway, so we launched the product, it's going really well. But we'd never, because the shell had evolved very organically, we'd never sat down and said, okay, this is... you know, our brand colours, this is our brand palette, this is our logo, like we'd never done any of that. So everything was a bit disjointed, and, you know, all good brands, you know, like Nike or something, they have such a clear logo, like you see the swoosh, you just know what it is. So it's not that we're trying to be Nike, I feel like it's or that I think we should compare ourselves to Nike, just clarify, but, you know, you gotta aim big, right? And so we said, okay, well, we need to go down this process. So we met lots of different branding agencies, and we settled on a branding agency. And they never felt right to me because I'd never felt they did any of them. They're brilliant, but I didn't feel that delicious yet. Anyway, so we're starting to go down this process, spending money that we don't have, and on the most expensive project we've ever done. And they keep showing me the work, and I'm thinking, that doesn't look right, that doesn't feel like us. And then they're saying, deliciously, it's too long, should we change your name? And I'm like, oh, no. And they're like, you know, well, we've been working in this for 100 years, and, you know, they work with, like, Heinz, and, you know, all the biggest brands on the shelf, and I'm thinking, well, if they know so much more than me. And I even was, like, literally contemplating changing the name. And anyway, we get 6 months in and we see it, and I just look at it and I was like, Matt and I just looked at each other and we're just like, we're so far away from who we are. We look like we've just been bought by Unilever, truth be told, and which we definitely haven't, no plans to be either. And it just was, it's not that it was bad work, it wasn't bad work, but it was so not us. Not even a little bit us, and but I'd been too nervous the whole way through to say, not I'm right, but this isn't us. Like, I don't think you understand maybe completely who we are, and just holding on to the fact that actually you may not be as experienced as them or as kind of educated in this space, but you understand the essences and the nuances of the brand better than anyone else ever can, simply just because it's literally stemmed from me. And we decided to walk away from the project, and we couldn't afford to walk away from the project, we couldn't afford to redo it, and we couldn't afford not to redo it either. And that was just a really good learning curve in terms of understanding, again, that sense of actually, like, the mistake is not trusting yourself, and this mistake is understanding when to trust other people, but when to also say, okay, there are things that, like, you always need to come back to.
Because there's a difference between, you know, like Matt saying, you know, we have to be the dumbest people in the room.
Yeah.
But there are things that you are the experts in.
Exactly. And understanding
and acknowledging that.
Totally. And that's been a really, really challenging but important lesson to learn.
Yeah. Fantastic. I do want to talk about some of your strategies, because as we were talking before, we have a friend in common, for dealing with some of the consuming aspects of sort of living your business. You know, you live and work with your life partner.
Yeah, we go out to dinner and talk about supermarket margins.
That's
very sexy.
That is hot.
I know.
And who's walking the dog?
I know. Yeah, those are the two conversations. Who's picking up the dog poop and what margin from a supermarket going.
But and also you are still, like I said, incredibly loyal and committed to your community and responding to almost all of the social media and responsive and etc. That takes up a lot of time. It also exposes you emotionally as well. So what are some of your strategies to creating balance for yourself? Because you're creating balance on the plate.
Yeah.
And where do you create
balance?
Totally,
and I realized that, like, 18 months or so ago, that, you know, and if anyone does want to read the book, I ramble a lot about kind of the ups and downs of the last few years that you don't always see on social media. And there have been moments where we're about to go bust, or where things in our personal life are just so challenging, and you're navigating that alongside being so open in the public space. And I realized that if I was going to keep doing this, which I really wanted to do, both of us would burn out pretty badly, and that you know, Matt ended up in A&E with burnout, and this was not really living the delicious yellow life in that sense. Like, it's ironic to create something about health and then actually be eating well, but that, you know, actually being healthy and I think feeling your best is about sleep, it's about stress management, it's about your relationships, et cetera, as well as your broccoli. And so I'd always really liked yoga. I'd always done yoga, but I really recommitted to it. A really nice studio opened in my house, and I committed to it. And I now go every single day.
Wow.
Yeah, literally, like, 7 days a week. It's my space. It's my breathing time. And, like, when you're working a lot, and we mostly do work 7 days a week, and I love it, and I wouldn't change it for anything. But I do know that I can get frantic, and when I start getting frantic, A, it's not good for my health or my well-being, but it also isn't good for my mental health or my kind of clarity of thought, and so I made that space every day. I always go before the day starts because it never happens otherwise, so I do 6:30 till 7:30 or 7 till 8, and it creates kind of balance and headspace and a sense of calm and positivity that for me nothing else in my life ever has. And I'm not saying yoga is the answer to everyone, although I'm a big believer in it just because I think it helps your physical and mental health together so well. But like for some people that's running or swimming or knitting, you know, or colouring, like all the mindful colouring and things like that. But I think having something that's easy that you can do kind of anywhere, anytime, any place that you can come back to every day is really, really powerful, because if you keep that as your routine, then when you're having challenging things go on in your life, you always have something to come back to.
And it creates that space for you to remind yourself of the things you do know and keeping your center.
Totally, and you need that. If everyone needs that, no matter what they're doing.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You've been so generous.